Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate running for governor of New York. Howie Hawkins has been an organizer in movements for peace, justice, labor, and the environment since 1967. As the New York Green Party candidate for governor in 2010, he campaigned for progressive taxes and revenue sharing as the alternative to Andrew Cuomo's cuts to schools, cities, and public services. He received nearly 60,000 votes, which gave the Green Party a ballot line statewide for the next 4 years. Hawkins came in third out of seven gubernatorial candidates on the 2010 ballot. A former Marine, Hawkins helped organize opposition to the Vietnam War in the 1970s and 80s. He was the leader of the anti-apartheid divestment movement to end U.S. corporate investment in the system of racist labor exploitation in South Africa. After attending Dartmouth College in the early 1970s, Howie worked in construction in New England and helped organize a worker cooperative that specialized in energy efficiency and solar and wind installation. He was co-founder of the anti-nuclear Clamshell Alliance in 1976 and the Green Party in the U.S. in 1984. Welcome, Howie Hawkins.
Good morning. How are you doing?
So tell me about why you keep running. Because, you know, you don't win. You just keep running. Is making the point more important than winning?
Well, they're both important. And we keep running because the issues that we're concerned about, we haven't won yet. But as I think Gandhi said, you lose, you lose, you lose, and then you win. So we keep plugging away.
So I was fascinated to know of your involvement in the military. What did that teach you?
Well, you know, my family, I can trace ancestors through different branches going back to the Revolutionary War. I lost three great-grandfathers in the Union side of the Civil War. And to me, it's like paying taxes. It's a civic responsibility. But at the time, I thought the war in Vietnam, that was a civil war. We had no business intervening. In fact, we prevented an election. I thought it was wrong. So I was conflicted. My draft number came up, so I enlisted in the Marines. And they said, what are you doing here? They had a file on me. They knew I was in the anti-war movement. I said, well, you're the best. And the draft number came up, so I joined you. And so they said, okay, we're going to keep an eye on you. But I got through basic training.
Tell me about your parents a little bit.
Well, they were Midwestern Republicans who believed in keeping a careful eye on the public dollar, not wasting the money, and staying out of foreign wars. They used to talk about Democrat wars, you know, and they'd trace it back to World War I right through Vietnam. And that's why they justified voting for Nixon, who had his secret plan to end the war in Vietnam. By the mid-60s, I'd lost faith in both parties. They both seemed to be slow on civil rights. Reagan was campaigning against fair housing in California and got that law repealed in a referendum in 1964, and the Democrats didn't seat the Mississippi Freedom Democrats. So I asked in 1964 at age 12 the same question I later learned John Lewis had asked at the March on Washington in 1963. Where is my party? And I've always felt that the working people need their own party. And I got involved with the Peace and Freedom Party that year in 67, 68. That was peace in Vietnam, freedom. That's the civil rights slogan. And the more I've been in politics, the more I'm convinced that's what we need.
Do you have a day job?
Yes, I unload trucks at UPS. Actually, it's at night.
Really?
Which leaves the day open for politics.
Wow. And you have family?
I'm single. I have extended family here in Syracuse, brothers and sisters and cousins out in California and Hawaii.
Okay. Would you be astounded if the returns came in and you won?
I'd be astounded. I think there's a finite possibility. I think we got a fighting chance. There was that poll.
What?
Two polls.
You think you can win?
Hey, Jesse Ventura went from 5% to winning. We got an independent senator in Vermont, Bernie Sanders, an independent senator from Maine who used to be an independent governor, Angus King. Lowell Weicker was elected as an independent in Connecticut. It does happen.
Can you wrestle?
Wrestle?
Yeah, Jesse Ventura, you know.
Yes, no, that is not on my resume.
Okay, Howie, what's wrong with Andrew Cuomo?
Well, I think he represents the 1%. Look at his funders. 99.31% of his money came from donations over $1,000. You know, average people can't even think about giving that kind of money into politics. And I think his agenda has reflected that. When you look at the last budget, he touts a property tax, which is token and temporary and small, and meanwhile gave quite substantial tax breaks to the top 1% in the form of an estate tax reduction, eliminating the bank tax, reducing the corporate tax. So that's where his priorities are. And I think when it comes to schools, I'm finding that's what's really got people worked up. Between the way Common Core was rolled out and what it's doing to the kids, putting a lot of stress on them, that's what I hear in the suburbs. And in the inner city and rural communities, they're underfunded. We have this gap elimination adjustment, which is basically cutting the school budget to balance the state budget and pay for these tax cuts. So people are upset about that.
You know, Howie, I've always had the feeling that the middle class are the people who win or lose elections for people. But Marx once talked about false consciousness. Why is it that so many middle class folks attach their star to the people who have so much?
Well, I think you're hitting at what is really the tragedy or the real problem of American politics. If you do public opinion polls, and there was an interesting study a couple years ago where they actually polled the 1% compared to the general population. The general population is generally progressive, particularly on the economic issues. The 1% is very conservative. And working people pretty much don't vote. I mean, they vote in low numbers. The middle class does vote, and they tend to vote with one of the two parties that represents the 1%, the Democrats and Republicans. That's who funds those two parties. So the problem or the challenge for the Green Party is to try to get working people back into the process, because that is actually the majority of people in the country. But, you know, the things we're talking about, we call for a Green New Deal for New York. And the New Deal part are things that Franklin Roosevelt put on the agenda back in 1944, his State of the Union address. He called for a second economic bill of rights, the right to a decent job, living wages, universal health care through a public insurance system, affordable housing. And then we add clean energy today because of the climate crisis. And the Democrats have had majorities of both houses and a president, every Democratic president from Truman through Obama, and have not got those things done. But those are the things, you look at the polls, people want. So that's what gives us hope, that if we can, you know, organize well and let people know we're out here and get them involved, we can win.
So how do you get the poor and the disenfranchised to recognize what's in their own interests and to come out? Why can't they just walk to the polls and go in and vote in large numbers?
Well, I do a lot of local elections, and I talk to a lot of people, and they are just alienated and feel powerless. They feel, doesn't matter who I vote for, they're going to do what they're going to do. I'm not even going to bother. They're just withdrawn from the process because they don't think it's going to be responsive to them. And what we've got to do in the long run is elect local Greens who demonstrate they're competent and they stand for the people's needs, and then we'll have a platform on which to run more effective races for state and federal office. I think that's the long-term strategy for us.
Yeah.
We got to run for governor to keep our ballot line so our local candidates can more readily get on the ballot for those local elections.
Well, last time you got 60,000 votes. Seems like a lot of people, but it really isn't that many people in New York State with 16 million, 17 million people. What is the likelihood you can do that again?
I think it's very likely. I think we've consolidated that base. The question is how much higher we can go this time. There was two polls back in, I guess it was late April and May, that showed that an unnamed working families candidate would get 22 or 24%, same as Astorino, the Republican, only about 15 points behind Governor Cuomo. That shows there's a lot of disaffection from Cuomo's agenda and record, and that there's an opening on the left. Now, I'm a working teamster with a name, Howie Hawkins. My running mate is a union teacher with the name Brian Jones. We think we're the ticket that 24% or so of the voters were looking for. And if they find out that we're out there, we can make a real race of this.
And how do you find out if you haven't got the money to do? Andrew Cuomo, I'm told, will go into this election with $50 million. Every time you turn the television on, you'll see his face.
Well, we need lots of little people to give a little bit of money. You know, our donations tend to be two digits. Over 99% of Cuomo's donations were over $1,000. So that shows, you know, where his money's coming from. But there are more little people than there are the 1%. So that's who we've got to reach and enlist their support. And we won't raise $50 million, but we'll raise enough to do some advertising. Hopefully we get in some televised debates and get fair coverage in the media, and people will find out about us.
If there's a debate, should you be in the debate?
I mean, absolutely.
You know what'll always happen is, I've gone through this with Papa Cuomo, you know, he'll say everybody has to be included. Or he did say that then. His opponent, George Pataki, said no. How do you lobby to make sure that you're in the debates?
Well, you know, I've been challenging the media to organize debates and organize a forum for all the serious candidates who are on the ballot rather than let the governor dictate what happens. And it's a challenge because he's going to put the most money into the commercial stations that make money from the advertising. And I think that colors why they negotiate with the candidates rather than tell them, here's the format, you're invited. And, you know, we're a serious campaign. We outperformed the expectations of the media last time. I mean, I'm this upstate guy that's unloading trucks at night, and the New York City media basically totally ignored me. They thought, you know, the Manhattan Madam and Jimmy McMillan, the rent is too damn high, and the black candidate Charles Barron would get a lot of votes, and I wouldn't get any. And actually, I beat them all. So this time around, the media is giving us more attention, and we are raising more money than we did last time. We're getting more media coverage. We have a serious platform. And, you know, my sense is that at least the reporters I talked to, you know, believe I should be included. When I ran in 2006 against Hillary Clinton, and my issue, you know, I was the anti-war candidate, they did have a debate from which I was excluded, but the League of Women Voters withdrew their sponsorship because I was excluded. So I think we got a fighting chance to be in all the debates, and I think we ought to be.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions so that people will know where you stand. I think they pretty well know, but let's go and take a look at fracking.
Yes, I believe we should ban fracking and put all our new investment and energy into clean energy. In 2010, I was the candidate calling for a ban on fracking at a time when most of the movement, environmental movement, was calling for a moratorium at best, or some were saying it was the bridge to the renewable future. But after the election, ban fracking became the slogan. I think I got a lot of traction on that issue, and people saw that.
Don't you think that it's a little naive? I'm just going to give you the other guy's position, because I'm with you on this. But don't you think it's naive to say this, that we don't need the energy, right, because we can have clean alternatives? We can't have them overnight, can we?
We can develop them very quickly. We have this world-class study by scientists, engineers, and economists from Cornell and Stanford that says with commercially available technology, it's economically and technically feasible to go to 100% clean energy in 15 years by 2030. And it would be a huge economic boom that totally dwarfs the most outlandish claims of the fracking industry. 4.5 million jobs to build it out in manufacturing and construction. That's the way we should go, and it will lower energy costs, because once you've got the smart grid for distributed energy production by distributed solar and wind energy generation, you've got near zero marginal costs in generating that energy because the sun shines and the wind blows. And the reason we don't have it is the for-profit energy industry can't meter the sun.
Howie, how about all those liberals, in quotes, who say, I believe in this stuff, but not near my house. I don't want a wind farm up in my hills, and I don't want a solar garden outside in somebody's yard. How do you talk to them? Because after all, those are people, you know, who profess their liberalism.
Well, the big wind generators, you know, there are some issues about them being close to housing because of the noise and the air pressure changes, but there's the land footprint of wind generation is relatively small, and it can be in areas that are not near housing. I was just out yesterday in Buffalo, and they have a wind farm out where the steel factories were in Lackawanna, and that's not bothering anybody, and people love it. And there's a park out there. People were windsurfing and enjoying the nice day. So there's places for wind generation. You can do micro wind with these vertical things that are quiet and can be attached to houses or shopping malls. And solar panels on roofs of offices, factories, and homes is something that's not obstructive. It's just a new cover for your roof. So it's not a garden in your backyard of solar panels. It's up on the top of your structure.
So what do you think Cuomo is on fracking?
Oh, I think he's pro-fracking. He just thinks it's politically unpopular. I'm afraid that if he wins re-election and turns to his presidential ambitions, he will open up New York to fracking because he doesn't want to be the only anti-fracking presidential candidate in the Democratic primaries. We saw maybe it was a month ago that Senator Schumer kind of called him out on MSNBC on the Morning Joe program saying all the Democrats are for fracking. And, you know, he sort of gave Cuomo a little pass by saying he was studying it. But then after that, Senator Gillibrand kind of piled on. That's the National Democratic Party position. And I think Cuomo is going to go that way if he gets the opportunity, which is, you know, one of my messages to the voters. If we're going to stop fracking, you need to vote for the Green Party.
Talk to me about immigrants. There's a national movement. There's a state movement. What do you make of our immigration policy, and what would yours be if you were governor?
first of all, we've got to treat the immigrants humanely and recognize their human rights. They are working here, but they're not recognized legally and don't have the same rights as other workers, which hurts all workers because it lowers the wage scales. And then I think we need to do things like let people have driver's licenses, whether they're documented or not. That's just a matter of public safety, as well as enabling these people to get safely to and from their jobs.
But wouldn't that be rewarding them for breaking the law?
Well, people are in dire situations in Central America and Mexico, partly as a result of our trade deals, which basically push people off the land and let agribusiness go in there and take land that they used to have title to and were able to support themselves on. So they are being immiserated. And then the drug war, you know, it's like prohibition of alcohol. If you put the drugs, make them illegal and have them go underground, the businessmen that run that, instead of going to court when they have disputes, they shoot it out and we have all this violence. So we have these kids coming across the border to get away from the gangs in Salvador and Honduras. I mean, these are problems that are beyond state policy. They're national policy, and we've got to address them if we're going to deal with, you know, this mass migration of people that are fleeing from violence and poverty.
Campaign financing. Now, you obviously have a limitation on how much money you can raise. As you said, two digits, the average contribution. Would you be doing better if you had the government giving you $6 for every dollar you raised?
Well, the bill that Silver passed would require us to raise $650,000 in contributions of between $10 and $175. I doubt that Governor Cuomo could do that. I doubt that Rob Astorino could do that. I think that standard's too high. I think also that
Do you think he did, I'm sorry for interrupting. Do you think he did that, Silver, because he knew, you know, that they wanted to put a poison pill in it?
I don't know. I think they were looking more at the legislative races where it's more feasible for Assembly and Senate. And what they're doing is putting a little public money that is capped. You can only raise so much and get a certain amount of that 6-to-1 match next to unlimited private financing. So it's almost like saying we reformed, but they don't, because the private money can still come in unlimited amounts. I'm for the kind of system of full public campaign financing they have in Maine and Arizona, where you collect a reasonable number of $5 contributions along with your petitions to demonstrate support. And then once you're in the system, everybody in the system gets an equal grant that's sufficient to reach the voters with direct mail and so forth. And then you're required to go to broadcast debates. So everybody's on the same level playing field. And that would be the clean money candidates. Given the Buckley v. Vallejo decision at the Supreme Court, other people could still run on private money. But at least you know who was running on the dirty money and who was running on the clean money. And the clean money candidates would have enough to run a good campaign. That's the kind of public financing I think we ought to have. And, you know, we're supposed to be progressive in New York. If Arizona can do it, we should be able to do it.
Talk to me about women's rights in New York State. Governor Cuomo has called for a full agenda for women, and the legislature hasn't done it. What do you make of all of that?
I think the way it's been put together, putting the issue of codifying Roe v. Wade together with the other nine bills, in a way is to keep it as campaign fodder rather than get the thing passed. I agree with, there was a woman who's an assemblywoman down in Scarsdale and then the head of NOW in New York who said, let's separate that 10th thing about reproductive rights and codifying Roe v. Wade and get the other nine passed now to benefit women now, which deal with things like sexual abuse and discrimination on the job and access to other resources. I would say let's get them passed and then focus on reproductive rights and make a campaign focused on that and get that passed eventually too. So these are things that ought to be done. I'm afraid politics has prevented a lot of them that could have been done because the Senate was willing to pass those other nine parts of the Women's Equality Act.
Now, Howie Hawkins, you are a Green Party candidate. I'm reasonably sure that if the Democrats were running the New York State Senate, that there would be a more progressive attitude about some of these policy issues that have been stopped cold by the Republicans in the Senate. As a third-party person, does that put you in a strange situation in which you know that if the Democrats were to win more seats, many of the things you've been talking about are what they would want?
Yeah, there's part of our agenda that overlaps with what the Senate Democrats, if they had a majority, would do. And those are, you know, moderate liberal reforms, common sense reforms that ought to get passed. And, you know, I'm not saying the Democrats and Republicans are the same. In fact, I would argue that me being in the race is going to bring people out who won't vote for Cuomo but will vote for those Senate Democrat candidates, so I'm going to help them take back the Senate if they do.
Have you ever gotten a phone call from the governor's office?
No, never.
Interesting. You know, I mean, this is a guy who likes to reach out to people he considers to be, you know, on the other side. So I'm fascinated because I talked to Zephyr Teachout, and I don't believe she's received a telephone call of that kind. So let me move to workers' rights. What do you think we need to do in order to give workers a better shot?
Well, first of all, we need to stop blaming teachers and public employees for our fiscal problems and our problems in the schools. I mean, that seems to be the signature of Governor Cuomo's administration. We have problems, particularly in the disadvantaged communities, in our schools, which are not because of the teachers, but because of the problems the kids bring in, given the problems in the community. And then we're not funding those schools enough.
Should we fire bad teachers?
Yeah, bad teachers. We don't want them in the system, but we need to have due process, which is what the tenure system is there for. So we don't want bad teachers, but we want to treat teachers fairly on the job. And, you know, in terms of other workers' rights, we need to extend to farm workers the same rights that other workers are covered by in our labor laws.
So let's just talk for one more minute about this business of Democrats, Republicans, and Greens. There are those people who think that the governor, and you certainly hinted at it at the beginning, if not stated outright, the governor is more of a conservative. And yet the Democrats pass bills that are more towards your liking. Is there a possibility of coalition building here?
Well, suppose I did get elected governor. I would have a mandate. And because obviously people would have voted for me because I was offering a different program, and I would go to those Democrats and say, look, you know, this is what the people wanted. And if you're not with me on this, somebody might be running against you next time because that's what the people want. So I think, yeah, there would have to be, you know, cross party lines, Green, Democrat, Republican, to get anything done if I were elected. I think on any particular issue after the election, you've got to find allies to get things done. So I'm not opposed to those kinds of coalitions. They're necessary.
Are gays being treated, LGBT community, are they being treated correctly in New York? Have we come to the point where we can sort of relax now?
I wouldn't say relax. I would say I'm encouraged by the progress. You know, for example, marriage equality is something we had our Green mayor and deputy mayor in New Paltz start performing in 2004 before...
Yeah.
You know, Attorney General Spitzer got an injunction against it, but that got the ball rolling until it got passed a few years ago. But there are other items on the agenda, like the gender bill, which would add transgender people to non-discrimination laws. There's a bill to secure the parental-child relationship where gay couples adopt children. And there needs to be more funding for homeless shelters for gay youth. They tend to be disproportionately homeless, and that funding has been cut. There needs to be better tracking, and Cuomo did move on this recently. It's something the advocates have advocated on AIDS and HIV, so people have access to the antiviral medicines. So we're making progress, but there's work still to be done.
Okay, Howie Hawkins, we're out of time. Our guest has been Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate running for governor of New York. It's so nice to have you with us, and thanks so much for joining us, and good luck. And I'm sure we'll see you again.
Okay, well, thanks for having me.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.